B-Pod Studios.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Welcome in, 98.5 The Sports Hub, Gasper and Murray. Murray's out of town, so you got me, Christian Arkian, here until 2 o'clock. Gasper, nice to see you as always, sir.
Christian, good to see you, man.
Always nice to be in this chair with you here on Saturday, and lots going on here. It's a busy Saturday. You just heard Ryan Johnston there giving you all the Bruins talk you could possibly handle for the last several hours. We will get into the Bruins and the trade that they made, the Celtics with their win over the Timberwolves last night, and this Kemba Walker situation, which appears to be getting worse with each passing bit of breaking news here. But I wanted to start, first of all, with the Red Sox, because that's the most urgent news right now. I don't know if you saw this, Gasper. I saw it sort of pop across my Twitter timeline, but it would appear Eduardo Rodriguez fell off the mound during warmups down there in at JetBlue in Fort Myers, and now there's a bit of a situation here with him. And I mean, listen, there's not too many more things that could happen for the Red Sox in this offseason, which I still consider it the offseason until, you know, the actual regular season begins here. I consider the spring part of the offseason. Eduardo Rodriguez going down might be, I mean, outside of Chris Sale, I'd say he's your most important pitcher left on the staff. And now Sale already started the camp with pneumonia, and here's Eduardo Rodriguez getting injured. What else can go wrong? I mean, Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, there could be a bus could get a flat tire or something like that. What else can happen with these Red Sox? This has been unbelievable.
JD Martinez gets coronavirus. I don't know. I mean, it's bad. It's definitely bad. And look, Rodriguez is a guy they're counting on. He had a career high last year in wins and innings. First time he went over 200 innings. He's been injury prone before. I'm trying to remember. It was a few years ago, I think he hurt himself in spring training. And that knee kind of bothered him most of the year. It messed up his mechanics. Now, I see a tweet here from Pete Abe about a minute ago saying Eduardo Rodriguez just threw in the bullpen here. He's doing agility drills. Seems okay. But this is a guy who has a history of not being the most durable guy in the world. He has a history of leg injuries, and those things tend to linger with him, and they tend to affect him mechanically and mentally. And so the way this team is built, and the fact the Red Sox are telling us, Christian, that, you know, it's not a throwaway year, it's not a bridge year, it's not a white flag year. They expect to contend. Well, you're not going to contend if Eduardo Rodriguez is not healthy and if he doesn't pitch the way he did last year, which I'll be honest, I think that's a little bit of a stretch to begin with. In terms of him being able to duplicate that performance, it sort of reminds me of the breakout season that Clay Buchholz had. And I remember being at spring training the next year and Buchholz himself admitting, like, yeah, I don't really think I can do that again. So I think if you're building this team around 19 wins from Eduardo Rodriguez, I think that's a fatal flaw to begin with, man.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think you're certainly right there. And that also speaks a little bit to one part of the Mookie Betts trade that I feel like was really sort of understated. And that was the whole David Price part of it. You saw those three guys go up on Sunday, or on Monday, whenever it was, and talk on and on and on about Mookie Betts and how much the family prices are for tickets and sort of everything else. Brutal press conference. We all covered all that ground. They didn't mention David Price's name one time. And outside of Chris, I mean, that guy was your second best pitcher last year behind Rodriguez. He's gone. Sale has pneumonia. And now Rodriguez, I guess, is back to doing agility drills. And it sounds like this injury was from, like, earlier in the week. So it's good to see that he's bouncing back from it. But I feel like lost in the Mookie trade is the really very real sort of thing here, which is that this starting pitching staff, the whole staff in general, really isn't very good.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a lot of things they need to go right, Christian, when you look at the rotation, right? You need Chris Sale to return to form and be healthy the whole way through, which even in his prime years as a Red Sox, that hasn't happened. He hasn't been healthy all the way through. Name me the season where Chris Sale's been healthy and at his best in September and October. What season would that be? It would be never.
Never.
It hasn't happened. And then Eduardo Rodriguez, who, you know, I like and has great stuff, but you're relying on him duplicating what he did last year, 19-6, 3.81 ERA, 203 and a third innings. Before that, the most innings he had thrown in any season was 137 and a third. I would say regardless of falling off the mound, he's a prime candidate to break down. You don't see that type of jump in innings normally, and a guy, a young pitcher, is able to survive that. Eovaldi, injury-prone guy, they need to bounce back. Martin Perez, who yep. I think I've heard you and Jones, he didn't have the highest whip in the league last year.
Yes, he did.
That's unbelievable. And then the fifth starter is just an opener.
He's an overachiever when it comes to walks and hits. Better than anybody else.
And the fifth starter is an opener. So let me ask you this question, because you brought up David Price. I think it's a really cogent point. You know, their whole thing in that presser, Christian, was this was a baseball trade. It wasn't a salary dump. So I want to ask you this question, because to me, this is the most pertinent thing about that Mookie Betts trade. Would the Red Sox have gotten more if David Price was not included in the deal? Would the Dodgers have given up more in terms of players? Or would they have gotten less if David Price wasn't in that deal? I'm of the mindset that they got less because David Price was in the deal and the Dodgers had to absorb his money, which in my estimation, that means it wasn't just a straight baseball trade.
No,
it was a salary dump.
I saw you tweet this and I agreed with it 100%. I thought you were dead balls right when you said that, because it's true. Them saying the money wasn't important or that the money wasn't the deciding factor or anything like that, then why'd you pay half of David Price? And what did that mean for the return? And why did you have to include that? Why not just make the trade with the Padres, which it sounds like you still want to do anyway, that Will Myers trade for those Cal Quantrill and those guys? Why not do that? Oh, because you needed to get out from David Price's money? Oh, and you still had to pay half of it? And that's what you got the return for? Come on. Like, that was brutal. Now, I wanted to, real quick, because this is also sort of old news, but I wanted your take on it. David Ortiz, did you talk about this with Mike and Tony yesterday?
I did. I wouldn't say it's old news, though. I think this actually hasn't gotten enough publicity.
I don't think it really has either, but I feel like people like David Ortiz, so they don't like, the reality of what we were hearing him say. I had mixed feelings on Ortiz and what he was in that 40 minutes or whatever that he talked in the dugout. I thought his breakdown of the Mookie trade was pretty good. I actually listened to that and I thought, huh, when he said, hey, they won without me, I was like, wow, okay. That's a message that I think that John and Tom and Sam would have really liked to have given out that way instead of the way that they did. The team's not terrible, okay? We won without me. I'm David Ortiz. The team's not going to be bad. Don't give up on them. That's what they were trying to say. But they said it by saying, hey, we got really cheap tickets. And hey, when I was a boy, Stan Musial went to Mexico and all that other stuff. So, it didn't come across the same way. David Ortiz, I thought, delivered that message very well. But I thought the rest of the messages he delivered were pretty flawed and pretty, in a lot of ways, hypocritical. Did you find that?
I did. Actually, that's a really good point you raised on the Mookie Betts thing. I mean, that's I hadn't thought of it that way. That is the way that I think ideally ownership should have delivered it, that, change is part of sports and beloved players move on, but it doesn't mean you can't win. Look at David Ortiz retiring. That would have been a great message. I don't know. I'm a little uncomfortable with this with Ortiz because I just feel like he's sort of compromised here. Like, it was weird to me when he came out and was upset that Manfred was getting heat. I think that's because Manfred in 2016 basically gave him the out of nowhere
PED. You think it was that? Yeah.
PED pardon. I said this yesterday on Felger Mass.
Gave him the Roger Stone special.
I'll repeat this again. What do you think happens first? OJ finds the real killer, or David Ortiz gets to the bottom of why he tested positive for that test? Which he has told us over the years that he was going to get to the bottom of that. We still don't know. We still don't know. But he got the complete PED pardon from Manfred. So I think that's why he's saying don't criticize Manfred. So I think he's compromised there. I didn't like what he said about Fires in terms of the snitch thing. I thought that was the wrong message. And then it came out hours later that Fires is getting death threats.
Yeah.
So that was a bad look. And then here's why I thought it was hypocritical. He's upset that the players are criticizing MLB over the cheating scandal and the sign stealing, and he thinks they should just shut up. Do you remember a couple years ago when they changed the rule and they were going to enforce the rule that guys had to stay in the batter's box?
Yes, and he got really angry.
He went ballistic and ripped MLB in spring training over having to keep one foot in the batter's box, which was an existing rule being enforced. And now he doesn't want these guys to complain about feeling like they got cheated out of awards and championships. Give me a break.
Yeah, he was the wrong guy to deliver that message. Right guy to deliver the Mookie Betts trade message. I think that they probably would have been better off just sending him to the podium on Monday instead of the three of them. That would have worked out better for them. I really believe that. But once it got into the other stuff, once it got into the cheating, and really, like, with the Red Sox, what do you expect David Ortiz to say? He loves the Red Sox. He's still part of the team. They sent a plane to the Dominican Republic to save his life after he got shot. And not for nothing either, but he got shot in the Dominican Republic, and he didn't snitch. So, I mean, I can see why he's anti-snitch.
Is he anti-snitch, though? I mean, would he want somebody to snitch on like the real sort of situation that happened down there, and like, you know, because I still don't,
I mean, maybe
buy...
he would, but I don't think anyone ever did, because the police sure didn't.
I don't know, man.
The police were like, no, he was trying to shoot that guy. Like,
I just, okay. I still find it hard to believe that, you know, it was just a case of mistaken identity. David Ortiz is the most famous person, you know, in that country. And I just find it hard to believe that it was just a case of mistaken identity. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's what he truly believes, and he doesn't want anybody to say anything about it. I understand that code, you know, that sort of capo code a little bit. But, I mean, this is different. And Fires is talking about getting death threats. And also Fires, you know, Fires did the right thing. And Fires admitted, too, because Ortiz's point was, well, you should have done this before. You're not. And Fires right. has come out and said, you know, take away my championship ring. Suspend me. I was a part of it. So Ortiz.
That's an easy thing to say now. It would have taken courage to do it while it was happening.
You're right. It's definitely easier. But for Ortiz's criticism to be what it is, I think it's undercut a little when Fires comes out and says, yeah, okay, that's fine. I was a part of this. Fine me. Suspend me. Take away the championship. Like, I don't know. I don't really understand what Ortiz is upset about with the quote-unquote snitching thing. I don't get it.
Yeah, it wasn't a great message for him to be sending, especially since, you know, steroid era. Where were you blowing the whistle on that one? You know, where was anybody blowing the whistle on that one until Canseco put his book out? Like, that's what it always sort of takes. It takes somebody who's in it coming out and sort of breaking the mafia code and, you know, snitching on going Sammy Bravano on everybody. But that's, you know, that's what it takes. And it's ultimately a good thing. And in Ortiz's defense, he did go on to sort of rip the Astros for doing it. Sure. So it's not like he was saying what they were doing was okay.
Yeah.
But I do kind of agree that, like, Mike Fires, you can say now, oh, take it away, suspend me. Blah.
Yeah.
No, you know they're not suspending you. They're not suspending any players, which I think was a big miscalculation by Manfred there, getting intimidated by the union, which that's a good union. So I mean, I can see why he'd be a little scared to go against them. But that was a bad mistake on his part because there's no consequences. What, A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luna, that's a consequence?
Yeah.
Alex Cora, like, you think that's going to stop these players from wanting to make their stats better? Of course not.
I mean, look at it if you're a player, right? Like, you just raised the point, and it's a good one. So I'm a player. This happened. What's to stop a player from doing this moving forward? Okay, what are the consequences if I get caught? If I get caught, they're going to fire my manager and general manager. If I don't get caught, I'm going to have better stats. I'm going to make more money in arbitration and free agency. I'm going to win more games. I could win a championship. When I do that calculus, it's like, I'm going to keep doing it. Why not? I mean, there's no deterrent. And I think that's what the players have been complaining about. And I'd say this too, Christian. Look at the players. Look at the caliber of player that's complaining. Like, it's not just, you know, sort of utility guys.
Right.
It's Cody Bellinger. It's Aaron Judge. It's Mike Trout. It's John Lester. It's Giancarlo Stanton. These are like all-star players who are complaining about this. It's not just like the middle of the pack guys. The guys that probably were impacted by this the most, like the Mike Bolsingers who lost their jobs. It's like the superstar players who are saying, MLB, clean this up.
Yeah. And by the way, the Red Sox still awaiting their punishment for their sign-stealing scandal, which is just preposterous to me if you think about it. First of all, that it's taking this long. And second of all, that whole rigmarole we were getting early on about, oh, yeah, they're only going to take a couple of weeks. This should be wrapped up really fast. They don't have anything. There's no proof that no one's going to get in trouble. Dave Dombrowski's all free and clear. Like, they have been investigating this for a while. And every time Manfred talks, I swear to God, it sounds worse for them. Well, we had to pull on this thread a little bit. There's still more stuff to investigate. We still had some more people to talk to, which led us to other people to talk to. Like, all of that sounds very, very bad. So we'll see if they end up doing anything differently here with the Red Sox. I would hope they don't. I feel like you got to be consistent at least. You can't start punishing players now. But
yeah,
Manfred definitely, I think, missed an opportunity here to give some real consequences to these guys because right now there aren't any. You know, like, that's sort of how I feel about that. Speaking of unions imploding on each other, the NFL, wow, they took a big vote yesterday. We'll get into that right after this.
Gasper and Murr, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Back here, 98.5, the Sports Hub, Gasper and Murray. No Murray today. He's down in D.C., I believe, in our nation's capital. So you got me, Christian Arcan, here alongside Gasper, B-Rob, back behind the glass, taking your phone calls at 617-779-0985. If you have any lingering thoughts on David Ortiz and what he had to say earlier this week, that story still with some momentum. Also, Eduardo Rodriguez, as is reported, took a little bit of a tumble there on the mound, but it appears that he's, okay, I guess. According to Mastrodonato, Rodriguez hurt his knee falling down in a bullpen session earlier this week. Renicky says he's feeling better, and it was Pete Abe, I believe he just said, that had him doing agility drills today. So there
you returning, go. Returning to agility drills, so hopefully he's okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little slip and fall there on the bullpen. That's tough. You've been away from the game for a while. You're getting back down there, getting back into the swing of things. That's unfortunate. Really unfortunate for the Red Sox, though, if it's anything serious with Rodriguez. Speaking of knee injuries, Kemba Walker will get to in about 40 minutes with his knee problem when we do Celtics at noon. But right now, I wanted to discuss the big vote. Well, it didn't actually happen. It got delayed yesterday with the NFL. Now, Ted Johnson was in with us yesterday with Jones and I in the midday show, and he was talking about when he was a player rep and sort of all the process of negotiating with the NFL and these CBAs and everything else. This obviously is a massive one. I mean, this is the type of CBA that's going to change a lot of things about the playoff structure and certainly the 17-game season. These are wholesale changes. These are things that are going to change everything. I mean, really, like, it's not an extra 10 yards on the kickoff or anything like that. Like, these are real serious things right now. So first of all, before we even get to this delayed vote, your thoughts on the 17-game season and also the new playoff structure?
So the 17-game season, you know, I'm not in favor of that. I just think it's completely hypocritical from a health and safety standpoint of the NFL. I mean, they've done all these things and trumpeted all these strides they've made in health and player safety. And now you're going to add an extra game, which exposes these guys to more risk. And then the worst part is you want to cap the 17-game salary at $250,000. Even if there are guys out there who would be due, like, you know, close to $1 million, the way it breaks down based on per game basis, how they get paid. I just don't understand. I mean, well, it's just a straight cash grab.
Isn't that what the owners always sort of do, though? Don't they always sort of pit these rich guys against the poor ones in the NFL? And I say poor, obviously, you know what I mean? Like the guy, the Russell Wilsons against the Jared Stidhams, for example. One guy thinks, another $250,000, another game check. Of course I want that. Meanwhile, Russell Wilson's like, hey, I'm supposed to get $1 million instead of $250,000. Yeah. There's more of the former than the latter. And that sort of seems like how the owners always win, right? Because it's such a big union and so many players, you can't get them all on the same side with these things. There's just too many haves and way more have-nots, and that's sort of why these always sort of go this way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that's an element. I mean, we were just talking about baseball and Manfred being afraid of the MLB Players Association. I think, you know, obviously the NFLPA doesn't wield the same sort of clout, and the owners know it. They feel like they can steamroll that union, and they have in the past. And so that's why they basically voted to approve the offer earlier this week. And basically, there's an ultimatum to the players. I'll say this. It's a fake deadline. You know, if you read that NFL statement after the owners voted and approved the current CBA proposal, they said, well, you know, we have to know by next week.
You better do it, you guys.
We have to know by next week. Yeah, technically, that's true, because February 25th is the first day that you can apply the franchise or transition tag. What they're not saying is that you have until March 10th to do so. So there could be a delay of a week before you know what the rules are for this year. So I'm not in favor of the 17-game season. The playoff expansion thing, I'm in favor of, and I have been since 2008. I just think if you look at the numbers, there's too many bad teams over the years that make the playoffs. It's just, you know,
isn't this going to be more bad teams that make the playoffs now?
But those teams are already in. That's the thing. The 9-7, 8-8 teams that are in as division winners a lot of times knock out a 10-6 team that's not a division winner, and that's the issue. And I've actually written about this a couple of times. I mean, under the prior format from 1990 to 2001, you didn't have any division winners that had a record of 8-8 or worse. Since 2002.
Didn't the Saints make it in once? Or were they 9-7? They must have been.
I think they were 9-7.
Yeah, okay.
I think they were 9-7. Since 2002, you've had that happen four times. You go back to 2008, six times a division winner has made the playoffs despite having a worse record than a team that was left out. That's just from 2008. So these bad teams, when people are like, oh, you're going to put another 7-9, 8-8. Yeah, you're already watching those teams. You've been watching them for 18 years since they went to this format. So now the only difference is going to be that team's still going to be in the playoffs, and so is some other team that maybe is more deserving. I guess the best way I can put it, Christian, is I'd rather have a field that's large enough to accommodate all the worthy teams than a field that's too small and that leaves out teams that should be in favor of like crappy divisions like 2010 with the Seahawks who went in at 7-9 or 2014 when the Carolina Panthers went in at 7-8-1 and actually went 7 weeks during the season without a victory and then hosted a home playoff game. That's absurd.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Wouldn't a better solution just be to go top six?
I'd be okay with that. Yeah. I mean, you can make that argument. You can make that argument. I'd be fine with
that. Instead of adding another potentially bad team. Like, if that's what you want, I feel like more often than not, you're going to get another bad team than a good team that deserved to make it in.
I hear what you're saying, but define bad. So, for example.
You just defined it, an 8-8 division winner or 9-7 or something like
that. But I don't think 9-7 is bad, and here's why. What I would say. The Titans were the last team in this year. They were 9-7. They went to the AFC Championship game.
True.
The year before in the AFC, you know what the Titans' record was? 9-7. The Steelers were 9-6-1. Both of those teams didn't make the playoffs. So some of these teams that people like are bad teams, if they actually get in, they could do some damage. And I would also say, do you remember 2011 when the 9-7 New York Giants won the Super Bowl?
I don't recall that, no.
Yeah. I know we'd all like to erase
what happened
that
after, what happened
from our memories.
The playoffs then?
So you have a 9-7 team. You know, this is a discussion that's been on this Gasper and Murray show since it was Bertrand and Gasper in 2008. And I know I'm in the minority here, but I'm okay with the playoff expansion. In fact, I think it's long overdue. I'll throw another one at you. 2008, the Patriots go 11-5, don't make the playoffs. The Chargers are 8-8. They win a horrible, terrible AFC West and get to host a home playoff game. None of this stuff was happening under the prior format. And the last point I'll make on this is the prior format from 1990 to 2001, you had three wild cards. There were three divisions.
Right.
So when they realigned, they lopped off a wild card. These divisions that teams are winning, like, does it really mean anything to win a division when all you have to do is beat three other teams? That's less than 10% of the other teams you have to beat. It's like 9.7% of the other 31 that you're beating. I just think it's disproportionate. I think the deference giving to winning divisions under this format is disproportionate to the degree of difficulty of the actual accomplishment. It's not that hard. And that's why 8-8 and 7-9 teams win divisions under this horrendous format.
That's okay. You're right about that, about teams winning the division that way. But that puts the emphasis on winning the division. The way it's going to be now, all the emphasis is going to be on being the number one seed because that's the only one that's going to get a bye week. Like, I feel like you're just moving the emphasis to something even less attainable. So if this is all about inclusion, if this is all about sort of getting more teams involved, the number one seed's going to be the favorite every single year, right? The only team with a bye week.
Yeah, but I think that will help the regular season because teams will play to the end. That is the biggest downside. I'm not going to deny that's a downside. It could turn out to be too great of an advantage to have one team with the bye, and you have to go back to, I think it's 7 straight years now where both Super Bowl participants have had the bye. However, you know, going back to this current format, you had you had 3 consecutive years where the Super Bowl champion was a team that didn't have the benefit of the bye. So you had, you know, 2 occurrences where it was 3 straight years where that was the case. So these things tend to be cyclical, you know. 2005 to 2007 and 2010 to 2012, you had Super Bowl winners that prevailed without a bye. Right now, we're in a cycle where it seems like everybody needs the bye. So I think you got to.
Since then, you haven't had much of that.
I think you got to play that out a little bit and see. Yeah, you say since then, but since then is 2012. So we had a stretch of 3 straight years where the Super Bowl winner didn't have the bye, and now we've had this other stretch. So I think it can be kind of cyclical. I think you need a bigger sample size before you totally read into it. So I am full speed ahead on playoff expansion. And I'll say this too. I think that these are additional games the players would be okay risking their bodies for because you're playing for a championship, right?
Sure.
I think a lot of players would say, yeah, I'll play additional games. So wait a second, my season would be over, but now you're saying I get to play in the playoffs? Okay. Yeah, I'll risk my body for that because I want to win a championship. Whereas these regular season games, I think they look at it and they're like, what's the trade-off here? Why should I do this? And that's the biggest reason they haven't had this vote yet. The rank and file of the NFLPA do not want to go to 17 games.
Yeah, and if there, I'm not even sure there is a rank and file at this point because it's just so split, you know, in the class warfare that is that union. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Let's take a couple calls here before the break. Owen's in the car. Go ahead, Owen.
Hey, what's going on? First of all, I'm a big fan of the show, right? I'm a working stiff. I usually work Saturday mornings, you know what I mean? And I listen all day and all night. But Gasper, you want to talk about player safety? Like, one more game, really? Like, you're talking, what, maybe 30 guys play the game? 30, 35?
Well, it's a, I mean, it's a 46.
What are you talking
man,
about?
What do you mean? It's a 46-man active roster.
Okay, so
and it would be it would be 30 guys or 46 guys multiplied by 32. How many people is that?
Okay, that's fine. But you want to talk, like, you're harping on player safety. It's like, buddy, so many people would give anything to play in the NFL, and these guys are crying about play.
Oh, and I'm sorry. I can't with this. It doesn't matter what you would give to play in the NFL. You can't. You're not good enough to play in the NFL, Owen. I'm sorry to break it to you. I don't know if any coach ever neglected to tell you this, but you're not going to make it in the league, fella. You're just not. You're not good enough.
And I'll just say this to Owen.
You got to be pretty good to play in the NFL.
Owen, we appreciate you listening. I understand your point. You're saying I'm harping on player safety? No, Owen, the NFL has been harping
on
player safety.
And they have been for 4 years, ever since they got sued. Yes.
Because they want to make sure that mothers allow their kids to play, and because they know they have an issue with CTE and all that stuff. So it's not just me, it's the NFL. So you can't have it both ways. You can't talk about how much safer you've made the sport and then expose players to additional injury. And really, a player, you're saying it's one more game? Well, what if in that one more game you tear your ACL? Or you're Luke Kuechly, and then
right.
that one more game you have a concussion. And that's the last one and ends your career. How's that?
Yeah. Or you're Rob Gronkowski trying to block on a field goal and you end up breaking your arm and have to have four surgeries on it or whatever. I mean, it's like it's silly to think that, you know, that extra game is going to destroy everything. But if you're the NFL, like, do you really care about player safety?
No,
or do you
don't.
Really care about that lawsuit where you had to pay $600 billion or whatever those old players? Like, that's what they care about. They don't care about player safety.
You care about not becoming boxing, where people are basically like, this is hazardous to, you know, your health, and people look at it and feel like it's sort of barbaric, and they don't look at it the way they used to. You know, boxing used to be one of the premier sports in America, and it's not. And that's what they care about. They want to preserve that. But you can't have it both ways. You can't trumpet play health and safety for players and then say we're going to have more exposure. And by the way, saying like, oh, it's one more game, that's like being like, oh, yeah, it's only one more car crash. Like,
right.
You know, you got in a car accident, but I'm just going to put you in one more. Like, it's only one more car accident.
I think that also the player safety thing is another divisive issue with the players, right? Like, you're going to tell a 22-year-old who's, you know, just played, coming out of, you know, wherever.
It feels invincible.
Feels invincible that, hey, when you're 60, it's going to be tough getting up and down the stairs. You think that kid gives a rat's ass about any of that? Like, we were talking to Ted the other day, and he's like, hey, you couldn't have talked me out of playing football when I was that age, when I was in college. What, I was going to stop playing football? I was really good. Like, I was going to go to the NFL and make a lot of money. Like, I wasn't going to stop playing. I don't care what these older guys told me. That's the same thing. You know, and the guy, the J.J. Watts of the world and the Russell Wilsons, Aaron Rodgers, these guys who all have these fat guaranteed contracts, they can go up there and preach all they want about player safety and, you know, what it's going to be like for you later on in your career. They're set. They're fine. Tell that to Jarrett Stidham. Tell that to everybody else. It's just it's really hard to get everybody in that union on the same page. It's almost impossible. I think. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. We see your calls lining up. We will get to them right after this.
Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. Gasper and Murray. On 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
That is your phone number here. It's Arcand and Gasper. No Murray today. As we take you up until 2 o'clock this afternoon, we will have Celtics at noon. In the meantime, we're talking NFL, the new CBA, which we didn't even get to the vote. The vote got delayed, by the way. The big vote, the process of the negotiating of the new collective bargaining agreement, which started almost a year ago. I think it was 10 months ago. There's the last 2 days here, Thursday and Friday, big days for the negotiations. On Thursday, the owners voted to approve the CBA proposal, which was on the table. And on Friday, the players said, no, not so fast, and said they won't come to an agreement. It was a close vote. 6-5, which just goes to show just how split these guys always are. But they did end up coming out on the right side of this, in my opinion anyway. And that's what's going on with all of that. We got some phone calls on the line, people wanting to talk NFL player safety, new playoff alignments, etc. So let's get to that right now. Tariq is in Boston. Go ahead, Tariq.
How's it going, fellas? First off, before I get to my point, I have a quick question. At the beginning of the season, when we learned that, even last year when they talked about adding games, we knew kind of where the players stood on it. If I'm the owners and I want either another playoff game or I do want to add a game to the regular season, why don't you propose both at the same time so that the middle ground is what? One of them, right? So I think that they understand they're not going to get both, but it kind of pigeonholes them into at least getting one in that negotiation. Go ahead. That was my first point.
Yeah, no, honestly, that's a good point, Tariq. I mean, that's what you do when you're negotiating. You ask for the moon, and then you sort of get talked down to whatever it is you guys can both agree on. I'm not exactly sure what the NFL's offering here, though. Like, they want the extra game. They want the new playoffs. They're offering money, I guess, like more game checks. But what else is that? Like, are they going to get weed or something? Like, what's going to happen after that?
I think that they want the playoff game. I think that that is more exciting for the brand, even though the only a limited amount of teams are added. I think that that keeps them in prime time more than just adding, you know, it's one thing to have games that buried at 12:30, 1 o'clock and, for teams that don't matter. It's another thing to have all those games be marquee. So I think that, you know, the NFL is really trying to pigeonhole it so that they go for the playoff game. Like you guys both said, a team with that's on the cusp of making the playoffs, they're going to want that opportunity versus, you know, everybody just playing an extra game.
Well, so, here's the thing I'd say, Tariq. One, NFL owners don't negotiate, they dictate. So they want both, and they're going to get both. The other part of it is this. Your point on the playoffs is legit, and I agree. But from a revenue standpoint, having the guaranteed extra week of play, they're going to get more money in the new TV deal, which is what this is really about. So honestly, I think if they had to choose, they'd take the 17-game season over the expanded playoffs. The expanded playoffs is more for the players. The 17-game season is more for the owners. But also, all those things together are overall for the owners because it grows the TV pie. You can go to a television network and say, okay, now there's an extra week of games that's guaranteed.
And all you owners are going to benefit from that, not so much with the playoff thing, right?
And now
all of you will get that extra
additional game. Playoff games that people will watch. And so this is happening one way or another. The question is, what concessions can the players wring out of the owners? And my argument would be they haven't really wrung any significant ones. Like, if you're a player and you're going to do this, wouldn't you want it to be, I can only be franchise tagged once instead of three times? Or, okay, there is no more funding rule, which is way too esoteric for me to explain, but essentially it has to do with the reason there's not guaranteed contracts is a certain amount of money has to be kept in escrow. That was originally designed to protect players if a team became insolvent. Instead, the owners have used it as a cudgel to be like, oh, well, we can't do fully guaranteed contracts because we'd have to put X amount of money in escrow. So there's like things like that that would be really significant changes. I think that's what the players are trying to maybe wrangle out of here at the last minute. But the owners are just going to jam this down their throats. Like, this is happening.
They are. Dan Graziano writes on ESPN that the main sticking point is that the players don't want to play 17 games. They feel it's asking too much in a sport that's already tough on their health and safety. Sources close to the situation said the reason the union executive council voted to not recommend the deal was because of concerns some of its members still have over the idea of the expanded regular season and doubts some of them have on the owner's projections for how much revenue it would generate. I think the revenue is going to be what it is. But the other part of it there, them not wanting to go that extra game, is something that I feel like the owners have wanted for a long time. Like, you know, this is something that they've been sort of fighting for because, let's be honest, they're not recruiting too many new fans, you know? Like, the NFL's already pretty chock full of fans. You can go international if you want to. I don't think football has that kind of international appeal that basketball does. And so what's the other alternative? Well, more games, right? Like, you have to have more games, more teams in the playoffs, more opportunities to go there, more, concessions and merchandise and sort of, you know, selling beers in those extra games. That's pretty much it. Like, there's not a whole lot of added revenue streams that you can squeeze out of this. And that's just unacceptable for these owners. These owners don't ever want to hear something like that. And to the NFL's credit, you know, it's not like they're just tearing up like an old constitution here. It's not like baseball. They change all the time. Every 10 years or so, there's big sweeping changes in the NFL. So it's not like it's the end of the world. But I don't know. I mean, this seems like they're going for the jugular here. Let's go to Steve in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, how you doing today, guys?
What's up?
Good, Steve.
Player safety is definitely an issue with this. I mean, right now, under the current format, you can't hit in the practice. You have to do walkthroughs. I mean, guys are already, how many guys do we hear going down with a torn ACL at the start of the season? Mm-hmm. It's already on the up, and now you're losing a week of that to add an extra regular season game. Of course, the injury is going to go up more than they are now because you're losing an extra week of preseason and practice.
Yeah, and also, Steve, the owners in this last one said, okay, well, here's our big concession. You don't have to practice as much, which is already, you're right. I mean, they already, like, cut a ton of stuff here. Now there's going to be caps on how many days they can play. You're right. I mean, that's pretty much the only thing
they're offering. More
injuries. Yeah, probably.
Less practice, more contact is going to create more injuries.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably true. On the other hand, you know, if it's less padded and hitting practices, maybe that could cut down on things like concussions and stuff like that.
Yeah, which is really what they want to do. But the reality is they're still, I mean, concussions.
But then you have to go play in a game.
So, I mean, concussions are down, which they've done a good job with the rules and all that stuff. But the reality is, I mean, you know, I always say this, football is not a contact sport. It's a collision sport. And so now you're asking these guys to absorb how many more collisions? I mean, it's an extra week of practice. It's an extra week of games. It's, and even we, you know, I'm in support of the playoff format. I said that, Arcan, but to your point about the bye week, now there are two more teams there'll be four more because they're adding wild card. There'll be four more teams now that are going to be playing, like, you know, a playoff game. And there'll be two more teams that don't get the benefit of a bye. So there's a lot of extra football packed in there, which for the players, they're taking all the risk. What's the risk for the owners?
None.
There's none.
There's none. You know, and that's the way they've set it up, and that's the way they want it. And in a situation like this, yeah.
That's the way the league's set up. Like, it's not this particular group of owners, and I'm not trying to vilify.
No, you're right. It's
the owners, that's just the way the NFL's set up, all the powers with the owners. But if you just look at it objectively, what risk is there that the owners are taking? The risk is all on the players. So if you're the players and you're going to do this, you have to get more than you're getting back. And I think that's why the NFLPA executive council voted against it 6-5. That's why they didn't put it to the board of player reps, because I think they want to go next week in Indy and see if they can wring a little bit more out of the NFL.
617-779-0985 is the phone number. We'll wrap this topic up with your calls right after this.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub, Arcan in for Murray alongside Chris Gasper. B-Rob back behind the glass taking your phone call, 617-779-0985. We'll get into the Celtics here in about 10 minutes when we get to the Celtics at 12. In the meantime, let's flush out the rest of these calls. NFL player safety, Red Sox spring training, David Ortiz, whatever you want. Let's go to Michael in the car. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, guys. I think I don't want to dismiss the injury stuff. I think that's a huge part of it, but I think it's really a little more cut and dry than that. This comes down to they want to pay $250,000 for a 17th game. If you have guys making more than, say, $4 million, they're getting less than their hourly rate, so to speak. You know, it'd be like if they asked you guys to work at, you know, an extra couple of hours on the show and only wanted to pay you half what they're paying, or a quarter of it in some instances. I think that's pretty straightforward.
That would be ridiculous.
Why does Russell Wilson want to do that? You know?
Yeah, of course not. Russell Wilson, the guys who make enough money, and Michael, that's a great point, but it's sort of undercut by the fact that most of the players in the NFL would be happy to get that $250,000. Like, that's capped off, so maybe they wouldn't get that. It's not like that's what everybody would get, but it's another game check for everybody else, and it would be in line with what they were making otherwise. So you're cutting off their income stream because the rich guys in the NFL aren't making what they would be, and I could see how that would not fly very well with the players.
But health and player safety is a real thing. Like, you know, I understand what he's saying. You know, the money is a big part of it, that they're not getting the right money for the risk, but the NFL's made it a big sort of crusade, and the players have bought into it too. So that's the thing. You can't make it a big crusade if you're the NFL and get the players to buy into it and then turn around to them and say, oh, it's, you know, health and player safety is really not that big a deal. Just play a 17th game. So this generation of players has bought into it. And again, you go back to the last CBA, a lot of the quote unquote concessions they got were the things you mentioned, Christian, about, you know, less practice time.
Right.
And not having to hit as much during training camp. So those were things that obviously were important to the union. So for a while now, health and player safety and reducing the exposure to injuries has been important to the union. It's not just a talking point for them. It's real.
Right. And also, just worth pointing out, not all of these things stick either. Like, sometimes they try and implement new rules and new sort of things and new get whatever, and it lasts a year and no one likes it and they stop. Like, when I was a kid, I remember they had 2 bye weeks 1 year. Remember that? It was like 92 or 93.
Yeah, they were a couple years
ago. And everyone hated it, and everyone said, this sucks, and the players were like, we don't need this extra bye week. And then the next year, they didn't have it anymore. So that's how I remember it. Maybe I'm misremembering. But, you know, it was something that they tried. It didn't work out. No one liked it, and they went back to the old way. So it's not – I'm not necessarily sure that all of this would be set in stone if it were to be implemented in the first place. There's a lot of little rules and stuff, like ball carriers lowering the crown of their head. Like, how many years in a row has there been some new rule like that just doesn't get enforced at all? You know, like, I know that's different. It's a rule as opposed to an extra game, but I do feel like there's some flexibility here, some wiggle room with these guys, you know, like that's sort of how it comes off anyway. Let's go to James in Sudbury with a thought on the NFL schedule. Go ahead, James.
Hey guys, just want to get your thoughts on an idea. What if we shorten game times to 48 minutes, 12-minute quarters, gives you back 4 games worth of 48-minute games. You could extend the schedule to 20 games and play the identical number of minutes. So when it comes to player safety, health, I think that covers that issue. And then get rid of 2 preseason games, so you're really only extending the calendar 2 weeks, and you get yourself, the Super Bowl out to the President's Weekend, which I think there's something.
All right, hold on a second, James. You obviously have thought about this, but you just gave us a lot all at once here. So 12-minute quarters, 18-week seasons, and 2 preseason games instead of 4?
No, you do 12-minute quarters, so you get back 12 minutes per game.
No, I get that. But then so how many weeks of the season would there be?
So you get 20 regular season games.
20 games, okay.
Okay.
But you take away 2 weeks of preseason, so you know you have 22 weeks total out there. So you're extending it, 2 weeks. But
I don't know. What do you think about that, Casper?
I mean, it's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. I don't think
the games are too
long.
I mean,
I understand his point, though. He's saying it would be the same amount of game time. I just think that would be a little bit too much. But it's an interesting idea. I think 20 games, I think just hearing that number 20, even if it's attached to 12-minute quarters, would be a non-starter for the players. But he's obviously given a lot of thought, and it's a novel idea.
Yeah, you do the math, I guess it probably adds up.
Yeah, I mean, math is legit.
You know, whether it's a 48-minute game or a 60-minute game, those guys are going to be beat to crap at the end of it, and they're not going to want to play 3 extra games. Like, I feel like that's
probably true.
No way that's going to happen.
But his math checks out. I mean, I've never heard it. It's an interesting idea.
Yeah, it's not the craziest thing I've heard this week.
It's not a horrible idea.
Let's go to John in Boston. What's up, John?
Hey guys, just 2 quick points. The first one, I'm not really sure if players would be willing to play the week 17 game. A lot of them, at least. Maybe you have a lot of high profile guys sit out, and maybe some mid tier guys, and then it's really just going to be a bunch of bums from the practice squad coming up and just playing that week 17
game.
Well,
not if they got a playoff seating on the line. I mean, if it's an important game, then they're going to put their guys out there.
Yeah, if the bye's still in play, then they're going to have to go all out.
Yeah, so that actually leads into my second point, which is I think adding this extra week 17 game and 2 extra playoff games, the playoffs might just become more about survival and who's the healthiest rather than, let's go try to get that bye week. Let's go try to get a better seat. I haven't really heard anybody mention that, but I'll hang up.
I
agree with that 100%.
Well, I agree with it 50% because I'll say I still think teams are going to chase that bye, but his overall – I think estimation of what the playoffs could become, because when you add the extra games, it really could come down to forget who the best team is. It's just a war of attrition. Who has their premium players available at the end? So that's a good point. I don't really think the NFL's thought about that. By doing these 2 things in concert, you really could get to a point where it's not about the best team. It's as he phrased it, it's just survival. Like, who is able to limp to the finish line?
Right. And there's a little bit of that right now. I mean, I don't think it's every year, but I feel like it probably would be if you added these extra teams, and certainly if you had an extra game. Let's go to Tom in Worcester. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, guys, what's up?
Hey, Tom.
Really simple solution, and just tell me if this sounds crazy. Why don't they just go from 53-man rosters to, 75? That way guys aren't playing as much, and they're not getting as beat up, and then they can have 18 games if they want.
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. It's kind of, I guess, a little bit of the soccer mentality where you have a deeper squad and you can rotate guys through. And this group of players plays in this tournament, and this group plays in this. I think it would make some sense. I just don't think the owners would do it.
No, because they'd have to pay all those guys.
Yeah, now it's additional salary. It's additional benefits. It's additional 401k.
And the coaches aren't going to want to play the bottom 20 guys either. They're used to coaching 53-man rosters. You know, you're going to have to teach all these old dogs new tricks now, and that's going to take at least like 5-10 years probably to get that.
I mean, I think a coach like Belichick would take advantage of it. You know, there would be more. The Patriots are obviously a game plan specific team, so it's like this guy features better against this team. In a lot of ways, you'd be giving more options. You probably would have guys on the roster just to do really specific things. You know, more guys along the lines of
Of all the special team specialists they could bring.
Exactly, more guys along
the
lines.
All the gunners,
Joe Cardona,
long
you know,
snappers,
was a long snapper. They'd find ways to do it, but I don't think the owners would ever
pay
for that. But I'll say this too, Christian. It's interesting in terms of the players and the risk that they would have to take on. The owners are aware of this because do you remember that Robert Kraft and Jerry Jones, maybe about 9 months ago, were pushing this idea of NFL players could play in, you know, when they wanted 18 games, that players would be eligible to play in 16 of the 18 games. Do you remember this?
And then, yes, I remember talk about it, but yeah.
I mean, it was a terrible idea.
It's a bad idea, yeah.
But my point is, they know that they're asking these guys to take more risks that they don't want to do. And so that idea was born from that, this idea of like, okay, here's a way we can make this look better. So they know what's up, and they know what they're asking the players to do, and they're just going to try and ram it down their throats anyway.
Yeah. All right. 617-779-0985 is the phone number. Coming up after the headlines here, we'll get into the Celtics. Big win for them last night, but at what cost? That's all coming up right after these headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.